Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. For sake of all beings, wisdom, compassion, and non-clinging awareness. Speedily I will awaken quickly for the sake of all sentient beings. Let's do a brief contemplation on compassion. Enlightened compassion for all beings. Lots of need for compassion these days in the world. By the way, it's a conservative majority.
It's a majority.
Oh, yes.
Elections Canada was in. Did you see it on Elections Canada?
No.
It was on the news?
Oh, I was just saw it on Google.
Okay, I'll have to check it again.
We had Canadian elections yesterday.
Oh.
National elections. Canadian national elections.
The result?
We're not sure right now.
Yeah, because I went to the official website, but if they're saying on the news, then something's changed, or
yep.
the website wasn't updated or
yeah.
something.
Oh, well. Compassion.
Curious. Yeah. Especially. <considering. laughs>
I've got that on. I've got your comment on here,
it's okay.
Jamie.
I don't know.
See, in some countries, you have to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
you could lose your life.
Oh, yeah.
In some countries. We're very fortunate in some countries we can actually speak freely. Not most countries in the world. It's quite something.
Mm-hmm. I'm thankful for that.
Mm-hmm. Omani Bame Hong. Omani Bame Hong. Omani Bame Hong. Omani Bame Hong. Oh, my name is Long. If you have any questions this morning, otherwise I will start to read from the text, The Path of Freedom, but if you have any, I always like your questions. They are most interesting. Because they're coming from you. Maybe you. It's hard to know. Yes.
I was a bit curious immediately waking up this morning, because immediately I was aware of the breath.
Mm.
But it was not where I was. But still there was a place where this self, kind of self,
yeah, starts to happen where the theme that you're doing is arises immediately upon waking. It's a good sign.
How come that this illusion of self was no more in the body, but the illusion was still on that side that was outside of the body?
Because maybe there's no location of self. You have to consider the possibility there's no time, there's no place for self. You can have self over here,
and breath over here. You can have an observer. You can be in the breath. There can be no separation. There are 100 possibilities for how all this can take place. So when that happens, it's marvelous because you begin to see that how one normally experiences breath may not be actually, is only one way of experiencing breath. One way of experience. Does that make sense? Or are you asking something else? This is very good because it begins to loosen. So it begins to loosen how one experiences the world. And you have to consider that how one considers, how we normally consider the world, or some people do, may be only one narrow way through conditioning of experiencing self, physiology, or body, and other things. And that's good, it starts to loosen. It's, you know, what I like is the little, you know the word discrepancy in English? Discrepancy? Mm-hmm. The little discrepancies. This is wonderful in meditation.
Discrepancy.
Yeah. Little, like little windows that open. And the key meditator goes, what was that? I mean, if you're good, you go, what was that? And what does that mean? Because sometimes they last for only a brief second. So if you are very keen, you begin to go, I'm going to work on that. That's a project. I want to know more about that, as opposed to letting it go. Give an example. You know, it's very curious. Last night or yesterday, I started reading a book that has been in storage in Europe for about 5 years in a box. So I've always been meaning to read this book. And this book is the study of one church in Rome, a Roman Catholic church. And the lady decided, she's an art historian and Catholic, she decided to analyze and study everything about this church. Not necessarily the dates, but the meaning of every single thing in the church as you walk in and go through it. It's fantastic. It's actually really good. Slow reading. It's very good. In her introduction, she talks about mystical experience. This is so interesting, this Western view. I find this myth is amazing. She says, everybody has had a mystical experience. True or not true? Actually, probably true. Most people I meet have all had some kind of transcendent mystical experience, but they don't know it. Then she says, very interesting cultural myth, that they only happen occasionally, and it's like a blessing. So you have to consider it's only going to happen maybe once in your life or twice in your life. And it will be a mystery, you see. It's a fantastic myth, and you see it in books all the time. It's completely different than the tradition of Buddha Dharma, which is actually take that experience and open it. Find out what it is. Go for it. The Western view is, I'm so lucky to have a blessed mystical experience. It just came upon me because I was in a church or walking in the forest. I never know when it's going to happen, so really I don't train. I just go on Sunday to church and pray and, you know, remember the mystical. She says, the reason for going to church is to have remembrance, which it means mind in English. Comes from the Sanskrit word mind. Remember comes from mind. To remember mind. Interesting, eh? She missed that completely. She says, it comes from mind. But actually, the word in English means to remember mind, which is profound. Not just that it means mind, but to recollect mind. So this is a fantastic myth that this little discrepancy of the mystical experience, you don't pursue as a vocation, you know, as a life interest. You wait till it comes upon you. And it may only be once in your life. But don't question that, because it's divine. Did you see? This is such a Western cultural myth. Whereas in our training, our whole tradition of Buddha Dharma for 2,500 years is what? Go after it. Perfect it. Don't let it go. Because that's reality. The other is not. So she's saying, which is so traditional Western, is the mystic gets a very brief glimpse of reality, of a different reality, and disturbs the public. So they may question, and they too may, you know. So I think we should all just wait for it to happen. So what's happening is, because you're putting your mind on it, it's starting to happen. You want to look for the discrepancies. It's in those discrepancies that you want to open up bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until it becomes normal operating procedure. That is what is so weird with the Western tradition of mysticism. Not as practiced by St. Teresa. Not as practiced by St. John of the Cross. Not as practiced by St. Francis Assisi. But practiced in the popular cultural myth of Western mysticism. And it is a problem, because it's so deep in the Western psyche. Do you see what I'm saying? But if you read the contemplative texts of St. Teresa and St. John, they are very precise about the marriage of God being total. Okay? Total. So you see in the tradition of Buddha Dharma, the experience of freedom is not something that you do in just in retreat. It's something that you bring in every moment of your day until it is the normal experience of the way you operate. How do you do that? You have to get a glimpse. You have to become unsure. This is, you know, unsure about life. You go, wait a minute. How could that have happened this morning? I'll give you a good example. I love this. You wake up in the morning. Maybe it's happened to you. You wake up in the morning and you don't know who you are. Mm-hmm. You don't know your name. You don't know where you are. Some people, oh, I should know. Well, that's a beautiful experience. You don't know who you are, you don't know your name, you don't know where you are, where you've been, where you're going. For some people that's frightening, for other people, that's glory. What a feeling. Why wouldn't you want to go, I wonder if I could do that more often? How do I do that? That's science. Good science. Good Eastern yogic science. Good scientist. You know, there's a scientist in the United States, Ramachandran. Have you heard of a very famous neurologist, Dr. Ramachandran? He's in California. And he investigates things that have been very hard to figure out in neurology, problems in neurology, like phantom limb. You know phantom limb? You know, when you lose an arm or a hand and it hurts, he discovered how that works. Very simply, with no big equipment. He works, he's like a detective of neurology. Well, he wanted to figure out what an out-of-body experience is. You know, out-of-body experience? So there's a great paper he published in, I think, Science Magazine, which is very, you know, big science magazine. And what he did is, he figured out how it could possibly work. So they went, it's a wonderful picture in the article, science article, where there's two guys and they're in the basement locker room at University of California. And they've set up these big mirrors in the locker room. And by using three mirrors, they can send the experience of the body way out into space. You know, sometimes you can also use a magnet. Now they can use a magnet over the head and it can push the body right out. You see? So these guys are, these are explorers. They go, okay, people report out-of-the-body experience. Let's see if we can do it in the lab and repeat it. He's a good yogi, by the way. You read his books, he's a good yogi. He knows exactly what he's up to. It's all about transcendence. He knows he is working on freedom. He really is an amazing, amazing being, this man. You just see him, you realize, oh, this is amazing. He is completely passionate about mind. What is mind? Yeah, fantastic. So that's what you look for. Is you look for the discrepancy and you ask, how could that be? And how am I going to get at that more? That's the art of insight. That's just it. You set up the experiment. I will work on it. And that's what we're doing with breath. We're allowing cognition to slow to see the cracks in the normal way we experience, which have been conditioned over, for you, only 20 or 30 years, you know. You can't be more than 40 years. You don't look more than 40 years old. I'm just kidding. I'm not more than 90. I'm just, a couple years more than 90. So, you know, you look very young, too. So it's very good. You look for that. Look for the crack. Look for the little cracks. And you don't let the cracks go. You start to come back. And maybe in many days or many months, it starts to open, but not usually right away. That's where the patience comes in. Do you understand? The patience comes in is developing the theme. This is called anupassana. The contemplation opens the door, but it takes time. You have to have patience to allow that crack, that discrepancy, to open. You see, in the tradition of Buddha Dharma, if you say, I experienced awareness last week, it's not good enough. Because the entire commitment is awareness all day long broken. If you take crown initiation, you go for higher initiation and take the vows of initiation, every time you lose awareness of compassion and awareness and emptiness, you've broken your vow in the day. You have to repair it. Every time you lose awareness of emptiness and compassion, you have broken your vow. That's what Dharma is talking about. Total awareness. Total awareness of mind in its natural state. That's the mystical experience. Get it all day long. Make no separation between mystical and unmystical. Life. Life as it is, not life separated. Thank you. That helped a bit? Yeah. Any other questions? I think you had one first. Yes?
It seems that non-clinging is the same as surrender.
Yes. As long as surrender is with knowledge. Mm-hmm. Knowing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Non-clinging is surrender. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
What is this technical term in Sanskrit for non-clinging awareness?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. There's many terms. You can actually translate smriti as non-clinging awareness. Shunyata as non-clinging awareness. Vipassana as non-clinging awareness. When you come to Tibetan, you have words like Rigpa, as non-clinging awareness. Dzogchen, Mahamudra, all non-clinging awareness. Nirodha, in Pali, non-clinging awareness. The Nirodha is the cessation of any clinging, so it's non-clinging awareness. Because it must be conjoined with awareness, because when there is Nirodha, there is complete mindfulness, total mindfulness, which is the same as awareness at that point. They come together. The non-clinging awareness was termed by Krishnamurti. So we use that a lot. That was what he used a lot, was Krishnamurti. He used non-clinging awareness. Non-clinging awareness. Or choiceless awareness. Choiceless awareness, choiceless awareness, choiceless. So we use that English word, but it doesn't always have, it doesn't come from necessarily one word in Sanskrit, but there's a whole bunch of words. They mean the same thing. The beauty, you see, is in non-clinging awareness is also choiceless awareness, which means you can have a choice what to do. Whereas normally it's felt, well, then there's doesn't matter. No, it does matter. You need both. You need it matters and it doesn't matter together. So Krishnamurti talked about choiceful awareness and choiceless awareness, which confuses people. He talked about both. You need choiceful, like, in other words, an abundance of choices, and no clinging to any choices at all. This is the unity. The unity. No, there's no discrepancy between those two. None. No difference. So you see, in the beginning, in the beginning for a very long time, also you see in writings and in teachings, people feel that the ultimate is no thought. It's not true. Nothing wrong with thought. There's nothing wrong with any thoughts. Only clinging is the problem. You can have all the thoughts in the world you want, and you can have all the appearances in the world you want. There's nothing wrong with them. Only clinging causes suffering. This is the mistake. This is the difficulty. It's not the appearances, it's the clinging. It's not the thought, it's the clinging. Otherwise, all Buddhas should shut up and never speak. They can't speak because they have no thoughts. This is nonsense. This is nonsense view. Yes. Next was Francisco.
Breathing before sleeping, and I woke up twice from wild dreams.
Wild dreams, yes.
Yeah, I don't know if the content belongs to here or to the interview with you, but then I was not sure. I was seeing it again after I woke up, and then I started to breathe again.
That's good. It's a good sign. It's a good sign.
Yeah.
This will happen more and more. Disturbing dreams, beautiful dreams, you don't care. But you come back to the continuity of the nose. So if you start waking up, even if you start waking up at night, you go right to the nose. Or you see changes in the dreams, this is good. It happens. It's a good sign. It's a good sign. You know, part of meditation is you get disturbed. It's true. You know, some people complain, I'm not sleeping as much. Fine, maybe you don't need to. Get used to it. I'm only sleeping 4 hours a night. Good, get used to it. I'm tired though. Good, have a nap. Don't worry about it. Stop worrying everything. There has to be rules. Don't worry about it. I'm having nightmares, very disturbing nightmares. Good. Maybe they're there every night. now you're becoming aware they're there. It's fine. Or you're getting a release of energy. You see, normally, one view. Normally, the nightmares, the difficult material, is kept down at night. You will not wake up in it. The theory, which I ascribe to, I think is very valid from my experience, is that the difficult dream material is working out the emotional level, not at the day level. It's too much. It's way too much for the organism to handle. It's being dealt with in memory and in neurophysiology at nighttime, which is one of the purposes of dreaming. To worry at night, not worry during the day. It's too strong. It's way too much material. You'd be anxious all day long, you know, worried all day long. So at night, both good and difficult gets worked out in a way that is nonverbal. Right hemisphere. Mostly right hemisphere dreams, nonverbal dreams, symbolic dreams that work it out at an instinctual level. It's very hard to get at during the day. So you want that to happen. When you start to do breathing meditation, you're going to start to become more aware, which means you can handle that material. This is a good thing. You'll be able to handle very difficult material the more you breathe. The more you're alive. You want that to happen. You want really bad dreams and to be in really bad dreams and let them go. And be able to handle being in the dream and not be moved. What you see? So this is a good thing. Because you're going to get it in the day and you want to be unmoved. They're both dreams. Which one do you want? So, you see? Good. Good. Yeah.
Would it be that it provoke my concept also?
Sure. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And also Dharma teaching will provoke concepts. Stir up. The calmer you are, the more clear your mind is, the more you can handle directly. You can just handle it directly. You wake up and you wake up in the middle of a difficult dream. You go, good, fine. It's not so disturbing. You just see it. But sure, you want that. You want to have the ground of your concepts shaken. This is good dharma. Like a salt shaker, you know. Get all the grains loose. You know when it's wet, they're all the salt is stuck together. You want to shake it up so it can actually pour. It's not a bad metaphor. Oh well, just came up. Yes, then you had a question, then we'll get to the text. Oh, two questions. Two questions.
I was going to say, so stuff that comes up in your mind, whatever it is,
yes.
If it's distraction or whatever,
yeah.
It's not good or bad, it's just whatever it is.
When it comes to insight, wisdom, there's nothing to cling to, neither good nor bad. It's just reflections of the play of the mind. If it comes down to relative life, you may have to pay attention to it. It might be a dream that is worthwhile to look at in terms of giving you an answer. Or where you're going, or what you're on about. That can be. Do you see? This is the balance between the antidote or the interpretation and no interpretation whatsoever. You have to know when. It is not such a simple answer. If you're practicing pure insight, leave it alone no matter what. If it's about life circumstances, there are important dreams. There are important... Excuse me. I'm very happy that coffee has no effect on my throat. It's very good.
It's cold, right?
No, it's not. There are signs in meditation that are important. Most aren't. But some are very important. But at the same time, you can't cling. You ruin them if you cling. That's the art. The art is to know what's important, what is not important, that ultimately nothing, no matter how important it is not to be clung to, but some things are worth some discussion. That's what you learn from a teacher.
Okay.
That's what you learn from a teacher. You either get it intuitively, or you need to learn it from a teacher. There are still students come to me after 10, 15 years with every little bit of information. They just do not know what to sort out. They come to me and go, well, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. I think it's important. I go, actually, none of it is. Or, yeah, actually, that is. Let's look at that. Actually, everything in life, now I'm going to completely change not really. That's why these things can't be transcribed very easily. I just went, not really. What does that mean? Okay. You know, when they transcribe, they write it out, it goes, what does that mean? What was he talking about? Okay. It's so funny. You know, I just,
especially this.
Let's consider it from another view, which is a much higher level. Every single thing, phenomena in life has meaning. Nothing is acausal. Everything has cause. Everything has meaning. Everything has stories that have profound meaning. In one sense, in a good way, you want to ignore nothing, but don't cling to anything. This is the art. And yet everything is giving you signs of what is good and what is not so good. So what happens is, if you cling, you get confused by all the signs. You're always chasing signs. Did you follow? You're always chasing signs and clinging to signs. If you don't cling, and it's artificial clinging, it's artificial non-clinging, intellectual non-clinging, then you miss important signs. Because the signs of what you should be doing, what is good, are coming to you all the time. In nature, out there, and in here, there's no difference. They can come at dreams. They can come while you're meditating. They can come anytime. The universe is screaming what to do. But most of the time, we're too busy to hear it. Do you follow? So there's both sides. One is a universe of signs, of which none of them are truly, ultimately meaningful. And yet, they can be, if you have the mind to see. So when the black bird flies across here, what does that mean? Actually, nothing. But there's a reason why it flew across. There's a story. And human beings love stories. Even Dharma, big Dharma stories, they love. You know? They love them. You know, if I'm sitting here and all of a sudden the petals fall off. Oh, what was the meaning of that? They love, you know, why is the boat going across right now? Actually, it's connected. It is connected. But one has to be careful one doesn't get swept by it. You have to be absolutely unmoved. And yet know the signs. You have to be a very good dream interpreter. Both the daydream, the life dream, and night dream. And know the signs. I mean that. So on one hand I'm saying they're of no value. On the other hand I'm saying they're of value. Most of it has no value. Most of it is useless. Most of it is useless. You have to be able to sort through and go, that's important. That's important. That's an important dream. That's an important vision. That's an important sign. That was an important thing we did yesterday. We went somewhere and we learned something. That was important. Many people don't know how to do that. Do you know what I mean? It's not. And then, of course, every day should be important. But there's many people who don't know what was really significantly worthy of study. This is a problem now for teaching too. Because a teacher says something and the student has so much information and so much stuff, they don't know what, oh well, that was important and that was important. But sometimes a teacher tells you something and if you listen, it will change your entire life. It was significant. You have to know when. You have to know when it lands. Mm-hmm. That's significant. So I've given you an answer, but I haven't solved your problem. The thing is your awareness has to increase. Let me answer your question this way, because it's important. I might get to the text today. We'll see. So much now of teaching. And it's good. It's not bad. It's good. It's not bad. But so much today of teaching is about mind. 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 Mind only. Mind. Mind. This is very high teaching. But today we have in the West a whole bunch of people who can't feel their bodies truly. They don't know what their body feels like anymore. They've lost contact. Sensation. They think they do. But they don't. We know this for a fact. They just don't feel their bodies deeply. So you say, does it feel good? Taste it. Okay. You should know. When you have that piece of bread, does it schmeck? Is that right? Schmeck. Does it schmeck? You should feel it right through you. You hear singing? Is good. You feel it right through. Does not resonate correctly. Everything. The train going by, the cars going by, the bird going by, the water moving, should move right through your whole body. There's no separation. The tonkas on the walls, which ones? Why? How the room is, everything. Even the sitting of the people in the room. All to do with touch, touch and sensation. So the difficulty today, and maybe it's been difficult for thousands of years, so today, yeah, modern society, is people don't know how to feel the immediacy of the signs of the universe. Do you know what I mean? It's too much data today. There's so much data that people are overwhelmed and don't know how to just feel directly. That's why I teach so much students who are with me about tasting coffee, tasting tea, tasting food, because we have to get the senses back. The senses are the root of the transcendental. If you go directly to mind, you miss the foundation. What's the first foundation of mindfulness? Body. What's the second? Feeling. Guess where everybody's going today? Mind. Chitta. It's very difficult. There's no foundation. So you see, the Anapanasati teaching is what? contact. I'll show you. Right there. It's perfectly described. Contact. It's all about contact. Contact leads to bliss. Bliss leads to freedom. The root is through contact. How do you know if something's good and an important sign in dreams or in meditation? You know. And if you don't know, you ask your teacher and they say, yep. That's how you learn. Right? They point out and say, yep, good. Go look at that. Go work with that. Okay. So you learn. What are you really learning? How to feel. How's the teacher doing it? They're not thinking about it. They're just going, yep, rah, good. No, forget it. Doesn't matter. It's done in 1 millisecond. You trust your feelings. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to think about anything. You have to think about almost nothing except how to get to Saint-Gallen. That's about it. Even then we can figure it out, right? We look at the road signs. Most of what we do is we are ignoring the signs. The road sign, was it Saint,
Saint Gallen Street.
And what was the other one?
Haydn.
And the other one, the other street?
Well, the one coming back, Fallenfeld?
No, the one
where
we turn. Martin Struss?
Martin Struss.
Yeah. If we hadn't seen that sign, we may have gone, and maybe 20 minutes later, an hour later. You see? You have to see the signs. Which is the important signs?
Cafe signs.
Only cafe signs. Roastery signs. Yesterday we went to a big industrial roaster for Switzerland and southern Germany. Fantastic. Huge. Never seen one. What, 1,000 kilos a day?
Well, I did the math.
I think it's more than 1,000 kilos a day.
It was like 10,000.
10,000 kilos a day of coffee they're roasting. It's huge. All computerized. You know all the different coffees that come down? Computerized console. It's different streams, different blendings. Fantastic. Never seen anything like it, ever.
4,800 kilos.
4,800 kilos a day of
on
coffee.
Average.
You know how much do you roast a day? A week.
250
grams. This much. He pulls up, he puts his hand in the coffee like this and pulls up. That's as much as Jamie roasts in a whole day. You know? He goes like this. Oh, yeah. Oh, have a bag. We have a 1 kilo bag. Oh, just have it. It's funny, you know the scale? The scale.
After oil, it's the most traded commodity.
That's right. It's huge. It's worth going to see that this is the second biggest commodity in the world. There are 6 billion cups of coffee consumed every day in the world. Isn't that amazing? 6 billion cups of coffee. And you go to a place like this, you go, yep. You can see it. You go, it's huge. And these are craftspeople, industrial craftspeople, not small, but the big ones, trying to figure out the blend that will work in restaurants that most people will taste and go, I like. This is a different thing. Not the specialty gourmet, but the big taste. So now I'm digressing. But now I'm really digressing. But this thing of sensation, why this meditation is so important, is because you've got to get the touch back, the sensation of direct, immediate sensation of what is wholesome and what is unwholesome, what is meaningful and what is not meaningful. And people are lost today because we live in such a complex world where we're bombarded by marketing. This is the best coffee. This is the best tea. Rebos tea. No, Rebos green tea. No. You should be drinking pomegranate juice today. It's antioxidants. No. Blueberries. Eat too many blueberries and you'll be like Swedish turkeys, male Swedish turkeys. You'll be trying to have sex with a car tire. Okay. They've been known to do that because they just eat blueberries all day. Okay. Eat blueberries. Okay. So, this is what the human conscious always is. Oh, that's significant. I predicted that. I'll just make predictions all day. At least one will come true, right? If I make predictions all day long, at least one will come true. You know, oh, good. All the ones you didn't do right, forget that. Okay. So this is a very big problem today as far as I'm concerned. There is so much information. People don't know what actually is meaningful anymore. They simply can't figure it out because they're not feeling their guts here. Their guts are all marketed. You know marketed? Commercial. Commercials. They don't know anymore. So they don't feel. When, you know, they go to a Wangkor and they ask you, what should I feel in a Wangkor? Ah, forget it. Like, forget it. It's hopeless. I almost go, sometimes I go, oh, it's hopeless. Don't come to the Wangkor. Because they can't feel. Well, what am I supposed to feel? Just go. Just go. Who cares? Well, if I come with you to the coffee roaster, what am I going to get? I don't know. Let's go to St. Gallen. Why? Because it feels good. Who knows what's going to happen? Do you know what I mean? Now tell me first. I don't know. Who knows what could happen? We may not even, we'll go to the library. You have to follow the signs, you know? You follow the signs. Get rid of the GPS. Just go. Right? Just go. Forget the directions. Just go and feel. Feel what happens. Feel what happens. Unless you don't have much time, then follow the GPS. So your question is an important question. Too many people are not getting a deep enough foundation in Dharma. They are following, their intellect is way too, their intellect of trying to figure everything out is so strong that they don't feel anymore. They just don't feel what is good for them. They eat food, it's supposed to be good. It's natural. But it may not be good for them, for their body. They don't even know what feels good in their body, it's what's supposed to feel good. This is why breath meditation is so important. If you don't breathe, you don't feel. And I'm meeting hundreds of young people and older people who have lost their breathing. They stopped breathing a long time ago. They don't feel their bodies. They're rigid, you know, rigid. They stopped breathing a long time ago, and they think they can feel because they emote. This is confused. They think they feel because the word feeling and emotion have been confused. Emotion is good, right? And they think that having emotions is deep feeling. It's not.
It's not. It is simply wrong view.
Having emotions has no connection to feeling at all. Most of a lot of emotion is because you can't feel. If you could feel your body, you wouldn't have all the floods of emotions. This is true. I mean it. The ones that flood the most, flood, you know flood? In Pali, asawa. That flood the most are the ones that actually can't breathe. When you breathe, you don't flood. You have emotion. Sadness, yeah. You can feel sadness. It rises and falls. You can grieve, yes, you can grieve. But it's not for 5 years. You're not sad for the rest of your life. You're sad, and then the physiology changes and rebalances. Good, you experience normal human emotion. It's not overdone, you know? Overdone. The big sound.
Now I've think I got it, what you mean with the emotions, because before it was not so, it wasn't quite clear how you make a discrepancy between feelings and emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think I've
understood. Emotions is very complex physiology. Feelings is much cleaner, much more straightforward. You want to have emotion, but not the flood. Just clean. If you're sad, you're sad. Someone tells you, my father, my mother just died. You should feel sad for them. It goes, but it doesn't stay all day. You move to the next thing. You know, you don't have to hold on to it all day. There's other people who are sad too. There's other people that are happy. You know, cities are very difficult places, yes? People, really, problem. Lots of people, problem. Yeah? If you look for those people. But there are many people that are happy and good people in cities. And wonderful people, and compassionate people, and loving people. You see the universe from the conditioned mind that you have. And what happens is, we forget, because that is the way it is for us, that is all a product of the conditioned mind experiencing the universe and interpreting the universe. Mind, our experience of the universe is not the universe, it's an interpretation of the universe. Every moment is an interpretation. There's no such thing as this. There's no Lama Mark sitting here. Is interpretation of your mind. That's fact. We know that from science. We know that from meditation. It's just the way it is. But we forget that. Unless we get high-level training and we practice, we forget that this is actually a construct of experience. One more, and then.
I wondered that there seems to be an interesting point in meditation when it changes from kind of form reference to space reference. So you said keeping it simple. Does it mean not to look for that more, going forth and back and stirring, like pouring into it? Or
good point.
Keeping it simple.
What is the simplicity? Ask, what is the simplicity? When we experience objects of the mind. Do you know what I mean by that? This is number four, Dhamma Nupassana, objects in the mind. Everything we experience right now are objects in the mind. They're things that come in the mind experience and go out, right? So because we're addicted to objects, we follow objects. I'll give you an example of what simplicity is. Watch. Okay, where's the boat when I need one? Come on, where's some boats? Okay, normally, if a cloud goes by, the mind follows the cloud, right? It follows it. It tracks it. If a boat goes by, the boat becomes the object. Do you follow?
Mm-hmm.
If the breath goes in and out, what do? You follow the breath. You watch the breath.
Mm-hmm.
If someone puts their hand up, that becomes the significant object. What is the most significant object in the room right now? Look around the room. Tell me, what's the most significant object for the object of mind?
Well, you are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Look around the room.
Hmm?
Okay, the bird. Keep doing it. Look. What's the most significant object?
It changes.
The light to feed us.
Breath.
Looking.
What's the biggest object in the room? The biggest. Hmm?
The walls.
The walls? What else?
Window.
Space. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest object. Almost nobody ever notices the space in the room. They only notice the objects in the room. Does that give you your answer? Only at number 12 does it change. At number 12, it changes from the objects, the bliss, the clarity, the non-thinking, the joy, the breath, the this, the that, to what? The space of the mind. The illumination of the mind. Making sense? This is very difficult because the addiction to the objects of the mind, the thoughts, the feelings, the emotions, the colors, the pretty colors, the stars, the sprinkles, the planets, all that we can do for the rest of our life collecting objects, but we don't notice that the mind is completely free. There's no clinging, and it's spacious awareness. That's simplicity. That's known in Dzogchen or Mahamudra as simplicity. The one taste of simplicity. Every object, the mind, tastes the same. Every coffee tastes the same. If you taste awareness, every coffee tastes the same. It's just awareness. It's just awareness. There's nothing else, just awareness. Everything else is interpretation. What's the biggest object in the room? Spaciousness. But that's not how most people function. They're habituated to the individual objects or the association of objects. Nice room you have here. They don't mean the space. They're not describing the atmosphere, how clear it is. They're describing, I like the paintings, I like the walls, I like all the big windows. Nice place Switzerland is. You know, it's a nice place. You have nice rolling hills, you have pretty colors. But you're not talking about the atmosphere. So only with number 12 do you have the first experience of pure awareness with stripped bare of objects. Just your mind now goes to mind. Before, the mind always goes to what's happening in the mind. That's most interesting, fascinating. Number 12 is the first experience of just awareness. Mind clear, liberated of all phenomena. Do you see? Otherwise, you're always, you know the word, English word, entranced? Entranced? It's a wonderful word, like bewitched. You are under the spell of the wicked witch or the wicked magician.
On LSD.
On LSD, yeah. On drugs. You will be looking at objects, entranced. You know entranced? Trance? Entranced by objects for the rest of your life. You will look at objects and never look at the mind. You'll always be looking at objects. This is liberation. Freedom is that the mind is non-clinging. That's what it is. You should laugh your guts out. The mind doesn't cling.
So what does cling?
The habit patterns. Okay. But they're not the mind. They're citta, which is called mind. But nothing clings. There's nothing that actually does the clinging. It's only an illusion. It's just an illusion. The whole universe is clinging if you experience it that way. The universe doesn't cling at all. Black holes don't go chasing planets down to swallow them up. They just swallow planets and stars and galaxies. Nobody's going, I think I'll go swallow a galaxy today. But they're evil, like the tornadoes. You know tornadoes in the United States? They're evil tornadoes. They are chasing down bad people. No, There's just weather. There are simply just earthquakes. People build houses over ground. Ground is unstable. When the ground shakes, people and houses break. That's just the way it is. Nobody has intent. Do you understand? That's just stories. The universe is inherently unstable. It's mad. You know? But the human being makes a story. Like the petal falling. It makes a story. No, petals fall. That's what they do. They just fall, you know? Pardon?
If it floated up, it'd be more interesting.
I've seen that too. I have a photograph of a petal. I took at Wangapeka outside the cabin, and it fell off a tree. It got held by an air current. I have a beautiful photograph of it. Just beautiful, just in space like this. Right outside the meditation cabin, and I could just sit there and go, I can show it to you. It's a beautiful picture, stable, just perfect little leaf this big, just standing right in the air like that, not just levitating. And eventually, boom.
But wouldn't you say that there is a difference between what is happening in nature and, let's say, tornado flying over a country and shooting down people?
No, it's all nature. Human beings are nature. All nature is nature.
But we are working on that nature.
Yes, we are.
Why are we here? Because we want to work on.
There's no separation, though. We do because we have self-awareness. This is a fantastic thing. Self-awareness. Something happened in the human brain that allows it to be aware of phenomena. This is an amazing thing. Like the universe waking up. Which will happen to computers, I guarantee. One day, they'll have a computer that goes, hello, I'm here. Now we can't tell the difference, you know. You know, you get on the phone, and you're talking to someone, you know. You're a computer! Wait a minute, I want to talk to a human being. Nope. You will talk to me. It's happening. It's fantastic now, today. I mean, just amazing. They have the first demonstration of a computer program that is self-aware, just recently, that has features of self-awareness. It knows it's actually making a computer program. In a program, not even a computer, just a program. It developed a program for that. But anyways. So, come back. Number 12 is the simplicity of the space of, not space. That's a mistake. Not space. Space is an object. The spatial quality of the mind that is free. So when we say space in Mahamudra Dzogchen, what's really meant is non-clinging. It has no clinging. It can't hold anything. Mind doesn't hold anything. Just doesn't hold anything. It only apparently holds things. It can hold the entire universe. That's number 12. Discovery of what is breath. Breath is freedom. That's where it all comes together. Non-clinging. Transcendental, Lokutara, Rigpa, primordial awareness, freedom, nature of the mind, essence of mind, Dzogchen, Mahamudra, number 12. But you see, it can happen as a mystical experience, but you don't recognize what it is. Now, the difference is Yeshe. Yeshe and Sherab in Tibetan, Yeshe and Sherab. Yeshe is primordial mind with enlightened attributes. Sherab is wisdom, but you know what has been experienced. You have to know what has been experienced. Sometimes you don't know what's been experienced. You simply don't know what it is. It might be, oh my God, that's amazing. You still don't know what the importance of it is. That's where the knife comes in. The sword. What is it? 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 Knowledge, knowledge, knowledge. Sherub, sherub, sherub. Yeshe is there is only the pure wisdom. The knowing of that pure wisdom. Sherub is the ability to actually know what that was, describe it, to actually discriminate it. Discriminate it. You need both. You need pure experience and discrimination. Is that what you're asking?
Yes. Thank you.
This is a good book. This is a good book. This is the oldest meditation book in the world. Well, I think there's an older one. It's in Egypt called Breathing. It's about 3,000 years ago. I found University of Toronto Library. Old Egyptian text from the pharaohs called Meditation on Breath. About 3,500 years ago. I never got to read it. So I was going to take Egyptian hieroglyphics in university just to translate that text. But I remember going and visiting the professor and no way. This is a monumental task, right? So I decided not to do that. But anyways. But this is officially the oldest complete meditation text in the world, about 1,800 years old. During the Buddha's time, all meditations were given orally. You just remembered them. Yeah. So when you went and you study with a teacher, they have remembered all the instructions of their tradition because their memory was excellent. They remembered everything. Right? They remembered. Fantastic memories. At this time, even before this time, there were some scripts on paper, but not this kind of paper, leaf paper. But very, very little was written down. It was all oral tradition. This was the first book written down about 1,800 years ago, of the entire Buddhist tradition of meditation in Southeast Asia. This book called Vimuttimagga was eventually lost in India and lost in Burma, lost in Sri Lanka, but it was taken before the Mongol invasion of India. It was taken all the way from Afghanistan around into China and Japan. This was translated from the Chinese back into Pali. So it's a very ancient text written by a great enlightened being. So when we turn to the Anapanasati, there are wonderful instructions in here. When I went to Rinpoche, he was teaching a retreat on this, and I went to him. Rarely did I ever get to ask a question. He just said, all you need to do is study this text. It's everything's in here. When you go to do Anapanasati for real, really, 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 really practice Anapanasati, it's all in here. It's all you need to do. I want you to. And he asked me to study the entire text, read it. This is when I was at 19, 18. Is just learn this entire text. Go do it, whole thing. But he also then gave me some instructions, which I teach, which were not in here, which he learned in the meditation monasteries. I want you to hear the language, which is so clear, about the oral tradition of Anapanasati, how it's taught as a meditation. I'm going to skip a few things, but I want you to hear this. How elegantly direct this teaching is. And if you don't understand any words, let me know, okay? Inhalation is the incoming breath. Straightforward? Inhalation is the incoming breath. Exhalation is the outgoing breath. Pretty direct. The perceiving of the incoming breath and the outgoing breath, this is being mindful. The perceiving of the incoming and the outgoing breath, this is called mindful. And mindfulness and right mindfulness. The undisturbed dwelling of the mind in this mindfulness is the practicing of it, of Anapanasati. The undisturbed. You know undisturbed?
Yeah.
No disturbance. Of, you know, to dwell in English? Dwell? To be. To be. To dwell. To spend time. To be in one place. Undisturbed. That's called mindfulness. To cause the arising of perception as regards respiration is its salient characteristic. Is salient in English is most important, means most important. So, the perception of breath. In this case, I say yes. In the perception of breath is the most important characteristic of this meditation. Now we need to discuss what is meant by perception. What do they mean? Attention, this is next line, attention to contact, the Pali word is passa, P-H-A-S-S-A, passa. Technical meaning is contact. Comes before feeling, yeah? Passa. Passa, attending, being with, passa, is its function. That's the function of the meditation. Removal of discursive thought is its near cause, is its close cause. So if you pay attention to contact, discursive thought will go. It teaches you, it tells you exactly what you do. This is because this is a meditation master speaking. Why? Because they know. No confusion. There's just no confusion. Now you've studied the text, you've gone through breathing in long, he knows, and so on. Okay? So that's what this next part is, all the way through. Then it says this. Here he trains himself in breathing in. It means mindfulness is fixed at the nose tip or on the lip. The nose tip or the lip. Because that's where the breath goes in. That's where you can feel it. Do you fix your attention here? No. Breath, only high meditation does the breath go in the ear. I'm serious, actually. Or through here. If you go here, the breath does not come in here. The breath starts here. So the Buddha taught it that way. Lip, because you can feel it. If you have a mustache, it's harder. So men, if you have a mustache, you're not going to get the upper lip. But you may feel it start to tingle, right? But anywhere here or in here. These are the places connected with breathing in and breathing out. This is fantastic. It doesn't say breathing. It says this is a meditation of breathing in and out. Anapanasati means in-out breathing or in-out prana. It doesn't even mean breathing. Interesting, eh? Doesn't even mean breathing. It means in-out prana, or pana in Pali. That yogin, which is male or female, that yogin attends to the incoming breath here. He considers the contact of the incoming and the outgoing breath through mindfulness that is fixed, like glue, like super glue. You have super glue? Super glue. Cannot pull apart. at the nose tip or on the lip. Am I going too fast? Mindfully, he breathes in. Mindfully, he breathes out. Now, this is very important. He does not consider the breath when it has gone in and when it has gone out. You don't start thinking about what the breath is doing out there. You don't start thinking about what the breath is doing in here. Oh, it's going into my lungs. It's expanding my lungs. I can feel my rib cage. It's affecting the dorsal lateral.
You look at me when you do this.
I know. I'm looking at your subculture.
Yeah.
What is it? The costal, whatever, you know.
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. It's moving, and it's moving in a posterior manner. You know, you don't need to know that, right? You don't need to know that. You don't need to know what's going on in there. You don't need to know what's going on out there. All you need is contact fixed at the point of sensation. Where's that? The nose. He considers the contact of the incoming breath and the outgoing breath at the nose tip or on the lip with mindfulness, nothing else. You need nothing else but mindfulness. It's clear. It's so beautiful, this text. It means it's decaying like everything in the universe. If you kill it, it dies, you know? Simple. He breathes in, he breathes out with mindfulness. Nothing else. It is as if a man were sawing wood. You know when you saw wood? If you saw wood like this, what happens? What happens to the wood when you saw like this? I wonder what they're doing in Germany today. What? Most peculiar. What happens if you saw wood like this or like this? Right at the point of contact. You know. Pagan, what happens like this? Yeah, the support, your finger, sometimes your finger, it goes off, right? It automatically goes off. What happens when you're driving and you look like this? What happens? The car goes there. If you're driving and you look down at GPS, what happens? The car goes towards the GPS automatically. Yeah? Shh, shh, shh. Oh, my finger! Just cut off. It only takes 1 second, right? Half a second. Somebody I know recently, they lost their finger in New Zealand. They sewed it back on. 1/100th of a second using a table saw, and they just got distracted. Their finger went right in. They just lost, but it's back on. Cut right off. And he said it was so fast, just like that. Just like that. Boom. So when you're sawing wood and you look at the point of the blade cutting, it cuts straight. That's what you want. Not like this. I wonder when it's going to cut through, you know. No, you don't need that. Just there. There's just cutting. Okay. That man does not attend to the going back and forth of the saw. Have to think about it. In the same way, the yogin does not attend to the perception of the incoming and outgoing breath in mindfulness of respiration. In other words, you don't have to think about anything else. You just have to be mindful. He is aware of the contact at the nose tip or on the lip, and he breathes in and out with mindfulness. Is it as simple as that? I mean, how clear can the instructions be? This is so confused. I tell you, there's so many books that confuse this. Aware of contact. Contact. It's what does it. If when the breath comes in or goes out, the yogin considers the inner and the outer, his mind will be distracted. As soon as you go interior, the thoughts and ideas, gone. As soon as you go out, I wonder if the whole universe breathes too. You're finished. You're gone. His mind will be distracted. If his mind is distracted, his body and mind will waver and tremble. Waver? I love the old descriptions, you know? Will waver and tremble. You'll start to tremble. You'll start to shake. Because the mind is disturbed. Love it. If his mind is distracted, his body and mind will waver and tremble. These are the disadvantages. He should not purposely breathe very long or very short. Don't control the breath. If he purposely breathes very long or very short breaths, his mind will be distracted and his body and mind will waver and tremble. If there is control of breath, there will be wavering and trembling. You know? Fluctuations in the body. Aches and pains, uncomfortable, twisting, turning. But as soon as it is natural, it is stable. These are the disadvantages. Next, very important. What time is it? Okay, a few more minutes. He should not attach, cling, himself to diverse. Everybody know diverse? Diverse? Many. Yeah. Perceptions. He should not attach himself to diverse perceptions connected with breathing in and out. Perceptions. Ah, symphonies. You know, you're breathing and you hear beautiful Mozart concerto. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's beautiful. Da-da-da-da-da. Forget it. Back to the contact. Beautiful rays of light in the room. Most beautiful colors. Contact. The petals falling. Contact. This meditation is going so well. Contact, right? Oh, beginning to feel so... Contact, right? Okay. Diverse perceptions connected with the breathing in and breathing out. If he does so, his other mental factors will be disturbed. If his mind is disturbed, his body and mind will waver and tremble. Thus, countless impediments arise because the points of contact of the incoming breath and the outgoing breath are countless. There's countless places that the mind can put itself. The text says where? Here or here. Don't lose it. Fix it here until the sign arises. Okay, let's see. He should be mindful and should not let the mind be distracted. He should not essay, go, too strenuously or too laxedly. If you go too strong and push, you'll lose it. If you are too lazy, you'll lose it. Right in the middle. You know when you're cutting a piece of wood? Gentle. You know not, it goes slower. You know, a saw can only cut so fast. Go too hard, go too light, there's just right. Just right. You have to feel what is just right. Not too pushy, not too soft.
Carpenters say you have to let the saw do the work.
Pardon?
Carpenters say you have to let the saw do the work.
Let the saw do the work, yeah. You know, for instance, like a diamond saw for cutting mason, for cutting brick or for marble, granite, only will cut so fast. If you push it, you destroy the diamonds. If you go too light, nothing to grip because it's chipping. It's not. There's no teeth. It just chips. So you can feel just the right pressure and then it's cutting well You're not damaging the blade. You're not burning or cracking the stone. It doesn't get too hot. The water flows. You have to know.
The material needs time to fall out.
Yeah. Yeah, it just needs time. But if you go too light, nothing happens. I used to teach, you know, gem cutting on the saw, because it's lots of water and people are very nervous. They don't push at all. It doesn't go anywhere. Then you get the ones, and you hear the blade screaming, you know, and you're going, you're ruining it. You know, you just destroyed a $200 blade. The blade's bent. Okay. If he goes too laxedly, too soft, too gentle, he will fall into rigidity and torpor, sleepiness. Okay. If he goes too much, then you get restless. So you have to feel this. You just have to feel. Pushy, too much push, too much laziness. It'd be just right. And you know that. It feels good. Okay. Now, to the yogin who attends, this is because this section is so important. I want to spend time with it because this is such a confused part of the breathing meditation. To the yogin who attends to the incoming breath with mind that is cleansed of the nine lesser defilements. In other words, if it's cleansed of attachment to things. The nimitta. Now, the word translated here is image. When you translate, if you use the word image, the word actually in Pali is nimitta. You've heard that word, nimitta? If you translate nimitta as image, what do we think image is in English? What is an image?
Sign?
Nope.
Visualized object.
A visualized object. An image is a visualized object. But that's not what nimitta means. What is nimitta in Pali? A sign.
Mark,
sign. Okay? So they made a mistake in the text. Because the word, number four, nimitta, right here. Okay? But they translate it as image. You need a sign. The sign must arise. Listen to what this arahat says. The image arises with a pleasant feeling similar to that which is produced in the action of spinning cotton or silk. Spinning. You know when they spin cotton or silk? Have you ever seen this? Good to see. Beautiful feeling. You have to be delicate in the finger. Otherwise, have you ever done this? It's good to do. Try. You break it, or nothing happens. So you have to have this feel, this delicate feeling in the fingers of contact, like silk or like cotton. This is why all the clothing is silk on these idams. The same feeling. Silk. Silk feeling. Like a thread. Or fine cotton. Mercerized cotton. You know cotton? Mercerized cotton? Like spinning. And it feels, will feel like spinning threads in the nose. Yeah. Also, it is likened to the pleasant feeling produced by a breeze. By a breeze? If you put your face in an open window and you feel the breeze, same thing. That's the sign. That's the nimitta, says it. Same in the Visuddhimagga too. Thus, in breathing in and breathing out, air touches the nose or the lip and causes the setting up of air perception mindfulness. The perception. And they've just described the perception. This does not depend on color or form. It does not have to be a color or a form. It is a touch meditation. It's a contact meditation. You see? Okay. This is called the nimitta. Unfortunately, it's translated here as image, confusion. But it's nimitta. The feeling of silk or cotton or the breeze is the experience of contact. That's the nimitta. That's the first nimitta. The yogin develops the nimitta and increases it at the nose tip. Remember I told you, stay at the nose tip. Let the nose get very big. It will start to get huge, the nose. You'll get big nostrils. You'll feel like there's nothing in the world but your nose after a while. After 3 or 4 days, the nose will feel giant, like there's nothing else in the universe. And it's alive. The nose will wake up. It will just feel incredibly alive. So it must increase at the nose tip, between the eyebrows, on the forehead, or establishes it in several places. This is inner yoga. They don't tell you what. This is in another manual. This is in a, this is oral tradition now. Yeah. This is the breath going through the channels, but they don't say too much because even that they consider secret. You just teacher passes that on. He feels as if his head were filled with air. That's it. The head, the throat, the chest, the abdomen, the genitals, the hips, the legs feel like they're full of breath, full of breeze. Like the brain is actually having, literally, I'm not kidding, the brain will have breath, like wind, move right through it, becoming alive. You'll feel it physiologically. Through increasing in this way, his whole body is charged with bliss. Everybody understand? The whole body is charged with bliss. This is called perfection. It's right there. This is the most confused, misunderstood teaching I've ever seen. You do it, you will see, it is so straightforward. This is so clear. Now, there are certain signs, visual signs, that come with after the experience of contact. That's okay, but you have to get the total body of breeze, of breath, really well to develop this. And guess what? If you are all, and many of you have experienced this already, but if you're all in retreat, usually I can tell you, most people will get the first experience in 3 days if you go all day long. Most people, no more than seven, eight days. That's it. And you will have the first experience, if you haven't already, you'll have the first experience of just, it goes right through the breath. Oh, it's just a matter of hours. You have to be here. Now, there are visual things that arise, and one is very important. But if I tell you, then you're going to chase after it. Because the most important is the one they speak about here. When the breath starts to go inside the channels, there are different kinds of things that arise. Okay? Different visual, or even sounds. Symphonies, trumpets, flute, all kinds of things. Cello, violins, all kinds of things. But they're saying here, be very careful. Watch, or listen. And again, there is a yogin. They're basically saying, now there are these types. He sees several images from the beginning. Right from the beginning, they see things. He sees various forms such as smoke, mist, dust, sand, and gold. These are the experiences that happen when this opens. Okay? Very classic. They're describing them. Or he experiences something similar to the pricking of a needle or to an ant's bite. These are called pitis. Yeah? If his mind does not become clear regarding these different images, he will be confused. If he chases after them, becomes confused. Oh, this is very important. then you lose the contact with the whole body. You lose the breath. Thus, he fulfills overturning and does not gain the perception of respiration. You see, you want to get the sign of respiration, which is contact, is the breeze, is the aliveness of touch. The other ones mean you're going a different direction, which is okay. If you're doing central channel work, fine. You want to know what those are. And you need to tell those to the teacher. Okay, I'm seeing gold dust. I'm seeing smoke. It's important because it means this is opening. It's okay. But then you go that way, you can lose the whole body of full aliveness, of breath. If his mind becomes clear with the perception of breath, the yogin does not experience confusion. They don't get confused. If you start chasing all the different signs of perception, you get confused. He attends to respiration and does not cause the arising of other perceptions. It's right there. Stay away from the other perceptions. Stay with the air sign. Stay with the air sign. Stay with the sign of breath. Stay with it. Don't get lost. Don't get confused. It's the way. Keep following it. Keep following it. It's going to go in. You see? Forehead, head, follow it. And it will open everything up. People don't believe me, do they? They don't believe it. It's amazing. If you follow the breath, it will naturally open up the entire body and the inner body. That's where the inner yogas come from. They just give it to you. They just go, okay, you've got so many nadis here, you've got so many nadis here, you've got so many nadis here, and so on. With, you know, it's got seed syllables. If you do this, all that will open completely naturally. It just happens.
Still stay here.
This is where you start. Mm-hmm. You start until it gets strong enough for it to move. Mm-hmm. Then you follow. Mm-hmm. You follow. You follow. Because you follow the breath, you follow the experience, the perception of breath.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It will start to move. Yeah, but it has to get strong enough here to start. That's where it starts. And every session you start here. Every session when you start standing, walking, you always start here. And you'll see that one, maybe 2 days before, it took you 1 hour to go from here to here. A week later, you start here and 3 seconds you're here. Or 1 minute you're here. It goes really quickly. Or 2 minutes and your whole body is full.
No jump.
No jumping. You just can feel it go right through. But that can take maybe months or weeks. But you have to be patient. Meditating thus, he is able to end confusion and acquire the subtle image. Now that subtle image, that subtle nimitta, is beyond the touch. But you have to tell me what that is. Okay? That's beyond the touch. It's more subtle than touch. And then what happens is if you attend to breath with a mind that is, okay, the subtle image, the subtle nimitta is a feeling of freedom. A feeling of openness, a feeling of expansivity, a feeling of lightness and openness, and it goes into jhana. Okay? That image is free. Interesting, eh? That nimitta is free. You start to experience freedom. That's not confusion, that's clarity. The thoughts go down, the happiness arises, you feel incredibly clear, direct. And guess what the subtle sign is? Oh, clear mind. Absolutely clear. There are certain visual signs too. But not right now. That nimitta is free, and it means free of wandering. It's completely clear. Because that nimitta is free, piti arises. You feel a joy, a physical joy in your body, piti. You feel a beautiful feeling of settled, blissful joy in your body. Piti being free, that yogin attends to breath and becomes joyful. It's wrong translation. Should be sukha, happy. This is jhana, absorption. Piti and sukha being freed, should be freed, not free, freed. This is not a great translation. He attends to the respiration with upekka, with equipoise, equanimity. Equanimity, piti, sukha being freed, he attends to respiration or to breath, and his mind is not disturbed. The jhanas, right? Piki, piti, sukha, ekagata. Just like that. Equanimity. If the mind is not disturbed, he will destroy the hindrances, the five hindrances of meditation. That is desire for meditation object, frustration or irritation, sloth and torpor, restlessness, and doubt. Gone. And arouse, bring up the meditation jhana factors. Thus, this yogin will reach the calm and sublime fourth meditation. That is the fourth jhana meditation, absorption. This is as fully taught above. And tomorrow I will come back to a bit more and then we go towards insight. Okay? See, it's very clear. Mm-hmm. It's the clearest description. If you do that, it works. If you go off, it doesn't work. But people don't have patience. Patience. I can tell you, because I've taught this so many times in so many years, I can tell you exactly how many days, how many hours, for most people. Even the ones that are completely distracted. The longest has been 8 days. But I do lots of Feldenkrais. That's why I do lots of Feldenkrais, because the Feldenkrais speeds it up, can speed it up by a month. Maybe by a year. You need something to speed it up. And they used to practice energy yoga to speed it up. All these people knew yoga. They were all professionals at yoga. They all practiced yoga. Some kind of yoga. All. Normal in those days. So that may be nice pile. That helps you today. So once it starts here, you see if it starts to move, and you follow. You follow the sensation of breath and let it open up the head. This can be 2-3 weeks, 1 month. You have to let the head open so it feels like the brain is full of breath. Literally, I'm not kidding you, the brain. The brain feels full of breezes running through it, and it gets alive. I'm not kidding. And then it goes down the throat, and the throat opens, the heart opens, down to the fingers, and you can do things. And down right to the toes, the belly fills. It's fantastic. It's a natural process by which the body and the mind opens by becoming alive. You become alive, the universe is alive. You become dead, the universe is dead. Freudian. Libido, morbido. Yeah. Right? Life? Life, energy, alive or dead? Today, many people are dead, so they need big things. Wow. Drugs. Big sound. Big things, right? Because they're dead. What could be more beautiful than this? Used to be that with children and teenagers, you could give them this to play with. They play for 2 or 3 hours. No problem. Right? Today, boring. Give me a video game where I blow up the world. Yeah? Let me blow up the world. Or kill those baddies. This you could play with as a kid. One whole day. Who knows what you do with this? Right? Whole day. Playing. games, playing, all kinds of things, investigate. You know what a flower petal is. Today, I doubt if there's a lot of kids that know what a flower petal is. If they fell over it, they go, what is that? Give me my computer. Of course, then they don't have any body, because they're here all the time, no body. This is unfortunate. And it's a cycle. Life is like this. I'm sure 2,000 years ago, the elders sat around and said, those kids, they're pathetic. They'll never grow. They're hopeless. They sit around. Look what they do. They sit around. They I don't know what they do. You know? I'm sure it's the same thing every generation, right? Those kids, they're just, oh God, I don't know what they do. Yes? And they put I see vegetation on the side too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To help rocks and all kinds of things. Yeah. Human beings, they take a long time. You have to be lots of patience. Human beings, they are just so weird. They're trying to be happy, but they just do funny things to be happy. They just don't know how to be just do natural things. So we experiment. We blow things up, we destroy things, we experiment. Nature experimenting on itself. It's fantastic, actually. Hopefully we will make it. Hopefully this experiment of nature discovering itself is going to make it. It's not going to be too bad an experiment, it may be, it's hard to say. And if we do, we go, then the cockroaches will take over and they'll have a very happy time. I'm sure the bacteria right now in the universe, in the world are going, just wait. You think that human beings control the planet? No, they don't. Bacteria control the planet. I'm serious. Human beings don't control the planet. They think they do. Who makes you hungry during the day? You think you do. I'm hungry. No. No, 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 no. There's more of them than you. Right here, there's 5 pounds of critters that have more numbers and more evolutionary intelligence than a human being. They rule you. The gut, the stuff in here, controls your life, believe me, even your nervous system. This is one of the most exciting periods of medicine in medical science today, is the discovery, which is just starting, just beginning, last 2-3 years, that this, what lives in here, is probably the most important thing for a human being, because they are actually a world unto themselves that have been around for 3 billion years, are highly intelligent, highly social. They communicate, they control, they know exactly what they've been doing. And they even get into the brain, through the vagus nerve up in the brain. They go all through the body, they secrete chemicals, they secrete toxins, they communicate, they rebalance. When you're hungry, you think, I'm hungry. Let's go eat. Who's saying that? Next time you're in meditation and you get hungry, try to feel who's actually hungry. Where did the message come from? Feel your body. And you'll get a pretty good idea. We're hungry. Think. Food now, go cook food. And by the way, make it some pasta with a little bit of tomato sauce and make sure you add some greens. Oh, and by the way, that bread, go get some of that bread and put a bit of cheese on that bread. I'm putting cheese on the bread. I guarantee you. This is one of the most exciting periods of medical science right now. Is they're finally discovering these guys. And it's exciting. Whole new field is opening up. Whole new field. giant field is opening up. How to make this healthy so the whole body is healthy, because everything is coming out of it. Even mental, even discovery of anxiety, depression, everything coming out of the guts, the guts, the guts. That's why you have to clear the guts. You have to open the guts. Yeah. My guts, intestines. My guts. They're not your guts. There are about 90 trillion creatures, 80 trillion creatures living in here, right here. Not including the ones that live on the skin, live through the skin, and live in the rest of parts of your body. They've been around for 3 billion years. They're really smart. That doesn't include the viruses. And there's more of them than those guys. What are they up to? What are they doing? When you walk on the ground, what are you walking on? 1 billion creatures in that much soil. Most are not known to science. What are they up to? A lot, as it turns out. You have to get away from you are in charge. But learn, by learning, you reshape. By learning, you reshape. By learning. That's the amazing thing. It's an amazing thing is human consciousness, what it can do. It's extraordinary. Extraordinary intelligence, the human consciousness. But don't always see, in my view, I don't take human intelligence as human. I've lost that. I don't have that anymore. For many, 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 many years. To me, the human being is an ecosystem of creatures. Only the human is conceited enough to believe it is a human. It's mostly not human. But it's been designed to make you feel like you have a self in charge. The intelligence of that is amazing. So I believe, bring out the intelligence. Let the intelligence come out by purification. More on that later. So this afternoon, have a marvelous time. See you this evening. And great, carry on. By this powerful activity, may it lead to cessation of suffering for all beings. Idante punyakamang asawaki wahang ho tu. Idante punyakamang asawaki wahang ho tu. Idante punyakamang asawaki wahang ho tu. May all beings be healthy and happy, and may all beings be enter into a continuum of freedom, the perfect union of wisdom and compassion. May all beings have the resources and the finances to do retreats. May all beings have a spiritual mentor, a Kalyanamitta, a noble Kalyanamitta. May all beings have the opportunity to study Dharma and become enlightened. Sarvamangalam, 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 Sarvamangalam.